This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I'm joined by my good colleague and friend Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. He's traveling. He's in glamorous Hollywood, but we look to the future. And the future includes the Asia-Pacific area consolidated in a defensive fashion because of the aggression of the People's Republic of China's PLA. And yet, during the fourth plenum, there are large questions that we cannot answer, but we can observe for the talk that's surrounding the meeting right now in Beijing and the expectation of a meeting of the APEC nations in Seoul, South Korea, soon enough. We welcome our colleague, Steve Yates of the Heritage Foundation, to help us with these rumors of diplomacy, rumors of war, rumors of regime change, all happening at once. Steve, a very good day to you. We begin with the meeting that took place in these last hours between the Prime Minister of Australia, Mr. Albanese, and the President. From the outside, it looked that it went very well and that the AUKUS presentation made in the last administration is in train, and that there's reason to believe that Australia, though led by a man who's been on and off sympathetic to China, is now on board with the idea that China is the threat for the immediate future. Do you observe otherwise, Steve? Good day to you.
Well, thank you, John. I do think that this meeting between the Prime Minister of Australia and the President of the United States was a net positive investment on securing greater peace, stability, freedom of navigation in the greater Indo-Pacific. There were a few different areas that hit very, very clearly. I think the two biggest were the rare earths deal, which we should emphasize the materials are not themselves rare, but are very vital, and that while this does address the supply and access issue, there still remains a significant processing challenge that we must accelerate. But the president and his team, and hopefully our allies, are committed on that front. But the second part was the president making clear that he supported the AUKUS framework, which at its core is delivering submarines to Australia to bolster naval capabilities in the Indo-Pacific. And not only was he supporting that deal, but he's accelerating the manufacturing supply chain. We have to see what that means, but that was a necessary step because the Biden team put in place the framework and the rhetoric of this arrangement. But of course, the defense supply chain was not accelerated during that time.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Steve, I thought that it was very good that we heard those two announcements, one on AUKUS, which you just talked about, and of course the rare earths, which you also discussed. But what was important to me was the optics of that meeting between Albanese and President Trump. And the reason is that the United States has lost a lot of popular support in Australia recently, largely due to President Trump's perceived erraticness. So what we saw on Monday when the two met was two allies going back to World War One, firmly reaffirming their partnership. I thought the optics were fantastic, and that should go to some way of improving our relationship with Australia in general, but also improving our public opinion in public opinion standing in Australia. Your comments.
Well, I agree. That has been a problem. Australia is a faraway place. You'd think in this globalized media environment that there wouldn't have sort of these silos of just constant negativity. But I find in a lot of our allied countries, they get an overdose of sort of the mainstream take on President Trump and Trumpism. And in Australia, the tariff move struck a very raw chord. They didn't understand why, as a reliable ally, they were getting hit with the tariffs. I think that you're exactly right that seeing President Trump in action with their prime minister and reminding people that the Australian prime minister comes from a different part of politics than Donald Trump does, not only kind of balancing with China a bit more, but also from the left. And so the president's gracious side, I think, showed a bit more. The entertaining but perhaps awkward exchange about the Australian ambassador to the United States and his previous comments about the president, with his very quick wit and humor, the president dispatched with that. I think all of that on display for the Australian population should have been reassuring, but conducting real business also should have been very reassuring to them.
To Seoul, South Korea, large questions about the new administration in the Blue House, large questions about the meeting of APEC, and it comes down to a fundamental. It should be obvious, but there it is. We're told that the delegation supporting Xi Jinping, the General Secretary of the People's Republic of China, have canceled their reservations at a luxury hotel in Seoul. Beyond that, it's a guessing game. What do you make of these rumors, Steve?
John, this is a little unusual in terms of past PRC engagement in diplomatic groupings. There wouldn't usually be this much now you see it, now you don't, in terms of commitment of who's coming. That we don't always have top leaders from any country coming to APEC leader summits, but on balance, most of them do. And of course, the value of the summit is less the grouping itself, sort of like going to the UN General Assembly. It's the side meetings that are the top line feature of it. And so it's been assumed for a very long time that this would be the meeting for President Trump and Xi Jinping to sort of engage in this second term of Trump. But now the Chinese are putting some uncertainty on that. And President Trump himself was echoing that. And so I think at this point, the APEC summit might actually be a bust in terms of the global diplomacy that will be engaged in there. The president will go to Japan before going to Korea to meet with the new prime minister there. That will get headlines. And then we'll have to see what kind of meetings come at the APEC summit. Trump talks about big economic agreement with China on the horizon, but the Chinese won't engage and say yes, the negotiations are delayed.
Gordon, there may be a connection between these unknowns of the APEC meeting and the ongoing fourth plenum in Beijing. Is there anything to say about that connection?
I think it has everything to do with the ongoing political turmoil in Beijing. At that ongoing fourth plenum, we saw that Xi Jinping gave the opening address, talked about the 15th five-year plan. That showed that he was in charge. But the propaganda releases afterwards were very skimpy. And that suggests that Xi Jinping is being sidelined. So it's dizzying to try to watch, figure out what's going on. And I think that President Trump is actually affected by this because sometimes he says, oh, of course I'm meeting Xi Jinping in Seoul. And then yesterday he said, well, that meeting might not happen. It's hard to figure out what's going on here.
Do we even know if she'll be there?
We do not. And there's a reason to suggest he won't go. If he's in political trouble, then he very well may decide he doesn't want to leave. He may want to stay close to the action. He may not be permitted to leave. And he may feel that if he leaves, he may not be able to get back in to China. So there's so much up in the air right now. The issue is, the point is, we just don't know.
You have a question for Steve.
Steve, what do you think? Do you think President Trump will meet Xi Jinping in Seoul?
Well, if she goes to APEC, I strongly suspect there will be a meeting. But that giant if is just an unusual thing that's important for people to take in. It should reinforce how absolutely abnormal China's political processes have been. And as the world has raced toward presumptions of Chinese supremacy exceeding the United States in any number of categories, being an alternative model, at its core is this very abnormal and ultimately not stable political foundation. And that should be an adjustment in every nation's calculus for the broader Indo-Pacific. And that should be overemphasizing the first island chain and the allies in the region as the reliable balance as Beijing sorts itself out.
Steve, we have about a minute. What should we watch for out of Seoul, out of that new administration? Is there any tell that would indicate they're going this way or that way in their allegiance?
Well, there's been a steady news drip of things that sound like increased monitoring of their citizens, persecution of Christians. President Trump has alluded to that publicly when he's met with South Korea's leader, and things continue to kind of come out that make one wonder. at the very least. And so I think we have to look at what are Seoul's actions. The best insurance for my money is that in Japan, they elected a real conservative for a time. And we'll see if that real conservative, who is pro-American, pro-alliance, pro-freedom, pro-defense, is able to succeed, and we have an Iron Lady of East Asia, that momentum could, I think, influence where Seoul may choose to go.
Steve Yates of the Heritage Foundation, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.